No, it's actually a shame I didn't record it, because no one got what I just said. Anyway, this week we're having class, obviously, and we're going to do things a little different than I've done all year till this point. We're going to do a little bit more Kabbalistic ideas. The reason why it's okay is because I'm not going to be here next week, though my father will be filling in and giving the shiur next week. And then in 2 weeks we have vacation, so I figure by the time we follow up again, you already would have forgotten what I said this week, which is good. I mean, basically, rabbis do this all the time. Right before they're going to go away for a couple weeks on vacation, then they say something as absolutely absurd and get everybody upset with them, and then they figure they have a couple weeks to get over it. Absolutely. So actually... In the shul that I normally speak in on Shabbos, I would have done it, and because I was intending that this week would have been the last week I was going to be there for three. I was going to be away now for three Shabbatot in a row, but it ends up I'm going to be away this week, so I missed the opportunity last week to say something completely absurd. And the reason I'll be away this week is because my sister had her tenth grandchild, and my mother's tenth great-grandchild, and we're having the bris on Shabbos. Anyway. Then you know having a Shalom Zacher Friday night?
Am I going to have one?
I think you are. Okay.
If you want one, we'll
have. Excellent. Apparently, yes. Okay, so let's begin. Essentially, what we're going to do today is we're going to do two teachings of the Vilna Gaon, which may have nothing to do with one another, except I suspect they do. And there's an advantage to being the Vilna Gaon. One advantage is that you're a Gaon. Gaon means genius, unless you don't know. The other advantage is that apparently he knew all of Torah and had access to it. And there's a difference between people seeing a little picture versus seeing a big picture. When you see a big picture, then sometimes you see things that are not necessarily in view in other situations. So without any more introduction, let's begin. Even though we already left Egypt and we would be tempted to say that that story is over, and by the way, we have once again, the fonts are messed up on your copy and not on my copy, but I've spoken to them about it and we hopefully will solve it by next time. So even though we would think that the Exodus is over and we're gone, it doesn't work out that way. In source number one, Perek Yadalid, Pasuk Hey, V'yugad l'melech Mitzrayim, ki varach ha'am, and it was told to the king of Egypt that the people had escaped. V'yafech l'vav paro v'avada v'la'am v'yomu mazot asinu, what have we done? Ki shilachnu Yisrael mi'avdeinu, that we've sent them from servitude. V'yasart rechvo v'etamo l'kachimo, he went and took his chariot, took his people, the Ikach Sheshma Ot Rechev Bachur, Bachol Rechev Mitzrayim, the Shalishim Al Kulo, which means he goes with the full force of the military might of Egypt. Vechazek Hashem et Leiv Paro, Melech Mitzrayim. By the way, before it was Viafech Levav Paro, he himself turned his heart, and now God gives him even more strength to do what he wants to do. Vechazek Hashem et Leiv Paro, Melech Mitzrayim, v'yurdof acharei b'nei Yisrael, u'v'nei Yisrael yotzim b'yad ramah. And they go chasing after the Jewish people. Now, the Zohar, this is found in the Zohar Chadosh in the Tikkunim, which is part of the Tikkuni Zohar.
By the way, Friday night, if you want the
So on the words in the Zohar here, which is actually back in the book of Bereshit, it's back when Yaakov is plotting his escape from Lavan. Within that discussion, in the second line of the Zohar there, it says, well, the end of the first line, Lule Elokei Avi Elokei Avraham V'Pachad Yitzchak, Hayali ki ata rekam shalachtani, that I'm being sent away without anything. Which means when Yaakov first says, I want to leave, he has nothing with him. He's going to leave empty-handed. On those words, the Gra explains in source number 3. And yes, I know that it's a mystical source, And as I said, it's the comments of the Gra to the Zohar. And those of you who don't know this or didn't realize this, the Vilna Gaon, aside from being, in his generation, the greatest Talmudist and halachic authority, also was arguably the greatest Kabbalist of his generation, which I know sometimes gets lost within the luster of his reputation in other areas. The Vilna Gaon had greatness, and in anything having to do with Judaism, he knew. We spoke about this a couple of years ago. I once gave a bit more of an introduction to the Vilna Gaon. It is the best introduction, actually, among his students. Rav Chaim Volozhin writes an introduction to the Gra's commentary to a book, part of the Zohar, which is called the Sifra Tzitzinusa, and there is just an amazing introduction, including the Vilna Gaon making a golem and other things. By the way, the golem he made before the age of 13. I mean, the Vilna Gaon was also the closest thing that we've... What? The Maharal of Prague, there's no historical evidence that he ever made one. That's a very good question. If you want, I'll send you a link to a class I gave on that.
But there is historical
evidence regarding his students discussed it with him, which means with the Maharal died in 1609. You don't have any reference to the Maharal having done this among any of his writings, among any of his students' writings. Essentially, anybody that knew the Maharal did not know about this. Much later on, we find people associating a golem with the Maharal. And where every tour guide will sell you, yes, every tour guide will sell you to. Whether the Maharal made one or not, I don't know. But as I said, is that none of that in his writings or his students' writings, there's no reference to it. There is a claim that his student wrote it, but that claim is a very questionable claim. The claim was first published that his students that connects his students with it was first published in 1909. So from 1609 to 1909 is a long time. And it's very, very likely that what was published in 1909 is not necessarily authentic.
When did the
He died in 1797. Right. It was actually most likely the thing written about the Maharal was most likely either was written originally as fiction and then people thought it was nonfiction, or it was... I don't want to call it a forgery, it's such a strong term, but it's a real interesting story. It has to do with Sherlock Holmes and all kinds of things. Again, if anybody's interested, you send me an email and I'll send you a link that you could either read. And I have a tape on it. I'll send you a link to the tape. I have it. Okay. Let's get back to the Vilna Gaon and his comments on the Zohar.
Wait, you said he built it.
I finished saying that.
That was a side point to get hijacked by us.
It was not.
I was going to say he was the Mozart of Jewish learning. That at a very young age he mastered all kinds of things, and when his student Chaim Volozhin discusses with him the making of a golem, so he said that I once started to make it, but I got a sign from heaven to stop. And he said, I figured it was because of my age. He goes, how old are you? He says, it was before his bar mitzvah. So that I don't know what you were doing before your bar mitzvah or bat mitzvah, but that. It's pretty impressive. Anyway, let's read what he says over here on his commentary to the Zohar. On four, it's underlined. V'hinyan ki Yaakov u'Lavan dugmat Yisrael b'Mitzrayim. And that's why we're here today. This is something which I may or may not have mentioned at some other time, but this is most likely the first time you've actually seen it inside. The Vilna Gaon claims that there's a parallel which exists. The parallel is between the Jews leaving of Egypt, the Jews leaving Paro, the Jews leaving Egypt, the Jews leaving Paro, on the one hand, and Yaakov leaving Lavan on the other hand. So he's saying is that this is a parallel, and here you see those words. Va'inyan ki Yaakov Lavan, the relationship of Yaakov and Lavan, dugmat, is a parallel of Yisrael b'Mitzrayim. Kimo sha'amru, as the rabbis have said, Ha'avot hein siman lebanim. Right, this principle that we've seen at various times, the Ramban, we saw early in the year, ma'asei avot siman lebanim, something done by earlier generations is a paradigm, is created for later generations. So he's saying over here that there is a ma'asei avot siman lebanim over here having to do with Lavan and Yaakov, or Yaakov and Lavan, and Paro and Yisrael. Galut Yaakov v'acharkach lakach et kol rechusho. Now, what happens with Yaakov? Originally, he's going to leave with nothing. Then what happens? This whole thing is with the stripes and the...
Spotted.
It's not the stars and the stripes?
No.
The spotted and the speckled, okay? And that whole manipulation that takes place. Achagach lachachat kol rechusho kimo kishekatuv hineri iti et kol asher levan v'chule. V'chein, parallel to this is v'natzlu et Mitzrayim. Parallel to this is how the Jews emptied out Egypt in terms of the wealth. So we're saying that is the initial relationship which he's pointing out between these two episodes. And then he points out something else that maybe you perhaps had missed. He writes, Uvimakel laka lavan beruchusho. And Lavan's possessions were struck with a stick. Ah, you missed the stick in the story, didn't you? So as I said, once again, that's the advantage of being... You can keep your finger right there in that source, and if you have the dexterity to look at the next source at the same time, in Pasuk Lamed Zayin, V'yikach lo Yaakov makal, livne lach v'luz v'armon v'yafatzel behen v'tzulot v'levanan, and so on and so forth. So over here, he notes that there is a stick in both stories. Now going back to source number 3, and that is parallel to the staff which is used within the story of leaving Egypt. So far the Gra has just now set up two parallels. Again, if you want to create a chart over here. And by the way, this your homework now becomes actually to find more connections than we're going to point out today. But he's going to claim that there is... Again, something going on over here. So far, what do you have? The wealth being taken, and secondly, the stick or the staff being used. Ukimo shebarach Yaakov kein b'mitrayim. Shamru derech... Now, what word did he want? V'chule. And as Yaakov escaped, so do the Jews from Egypt escape. Now, what word does he want to end over there? It's really, look where it's bolded again. V'chein derech shloshet yamin. So he says, now the main point of what he's really going to discuss is going to be the parallel between the being chased down in this week's parsha, when Paro goes running after, in pursuit of Am Yisrael, as Lavan goes in pursuit of Yaakov. Now, of course, those of you who know how the story ends are going to say, well, what are you talking about? It doesn't end the same way at all. It ends in two very different ways. Correct. There are definitely differences between the stories, and because there are differences between the stories is why most likely many people have not noticed the parallels between the stories, because ultimately you say, no, these are different stories. Because at the very end of this story, we have Egypt drowning in the sea, which miraculously is split. And in the story of Lavan and Yaakov, we end up with a covenant being created between the two, which sounds like, in fact, very different stories. Yeah. Very good. We'll see that in a moment as well.
They were both on their way to
land. And they're both on the way to the lands of Israel. And what I want you to appreciate, and this is how we're at some point we're going to need to stretch ourselves a little bit more to understand really what's going on, because you don't know yet what's going on. What the Gra, right, the Vilna Gaon is the Gra, the Gra is going to Rabbi Eliyahu. What the Gra is really doing over here is he's telling us that stories of redemption have parallel aspects to it. That's really what he's telling us over here. Because even though we may tend not to look at the story of Yaakov leaving Lavan and heading to Israel as a story of redemption, he's telling us, no, this is a story of redemption. And ultimately, in Jewish history, there are multiple stories of redemption. We have the story of redemption of Yaakov leaving Lavan, which, as I said, we would normally just tend to ignore. Right? That's not, you know, that's prehistory. It doesn't really concern us. No, that's a story of redemption. The second major story of redemption that takes place is the story of leaving Egypt. Now, the question then becomes, okay, what is the next story of redemption? And there may very well be a number along the way, including, and this will not seem at all relevant for you today, including coming back to build the second Beit HaMikdash, will also be a story of redemption, which is definitely an aborted story of redemption, and it doesn't work out the way that it's supposed to, but there are certain characters in there which should be discussed, which will not be discussed today. And then there is finally, ultimately, the final redemption. Now the question also then becomes, to what extent does the final redemption have its prototype created within the two earlier stories, not just within the one, which is why actually noticing what the commonality between the two becomes very important, and also what's not in common becomes very important, which, just for example, and the Gaon doesn't say what I'm about to say, it could be that the fact that Lavan and Yaakov at the very end of the day create a covenant and an understanding and so on, maybe that's very significant for the final redemption. Okay, so just to realize, maybe leaving Egypt, things don't work out the way that they're supposed to, which really is a continuation of what we spoke about at the very end of last week. Everything good? Let's continue. We're still in the middle of...
Does Abraham figure in this
Everyone figures in. Everything figures in. But yes. Let's continue then. V'chein derech shlosha yamim v'yaged lavan v'yom ha-shlishi. V'chein hisigu b'yom ha-shvi'i. In both stories, again, and if anyone ever heard this teaching of the Gra, this would have been the part that you would have heard, because this is really the most intriguing, and the parallel is the strongest, is that on the third day in both cases they take chase, and in the seventh day in both cases they catch up, which means when I speak about the essence of holiness of the seventh day of Pesach, right, this would be a good shiur if anybody has to speak on the seventh day of Pesach. If you had to speak on the seventh day of Pesach, you say, okay, so what is the essence of the seventh day? So you say, it's Kriyat Yamsuf. No, it's more than Kriyat Yamsuf. It's more than the splitting of the sea. It's this whole story of the Jews being chased. Again, they think they're free and then being chased down, but then being at the brink of death and then being saved. But a lot of those elements, again, of thinking that you're free, of being chased down, right, and then being saved, all those elements are right here in the story of Lavan, which means the prototype, as he says, the Ma'aseh Avot Simon Lavanim, the prototype for the whole story of the seventh day of Pesach is really over here already in the story of Lavan, and therefore it becomes, again, more important to actually study and to compare the two episodes. V'chein yisug b'yom ha-shvi'i, k'mo shekatav, v'yirdof acharav derech v'chule, hakol k'mo b'mitzrayim. And the Gur writes, everything is like the episode that takes place in Egypt. V'chein kol ma'aseh l'fi shemidakdek. And every single aspect will become clear for the person who reads this very carefully. So therefore, those of you who don't understand, the Vilna Gaon will accuse you of not having read it carefully enough. But in his mind, again, what you should understand from that line is that he's not telling you everything. He's actually telling you a little bit of it, and there's much, much more, which, of course, that's what we're going to have to try to do today, is to look for a little bit more. I will not give you everything, but a little bit more I will give you. The Vilna Gaon, you get the feeling when he writes that he's not even writing for somebody else. And by the way, he died at the age of 70. He did not write anything after the age of 40. He did not do any writing after the age of 40. It's actually like almost the only writings that we have that he wrote afterward, that are attributed to him afterwards, were he would give, let's say, a Yahrzeit shiur for his for one of his parents or something, and his students would come and listen, and those are the books that came out afterwards. I mean, he did not write. He sat and he learned the Vilna Gaon. I do get the feeling the things that are written, the things that he said, were really more so for himself than they were for other people. And therefore, when learning the Vilna Gaon is very difficult, because you really do need his breadth of knowledge to understand the references that he's making. And he says a line like this, it's not to be coy. It's not really, you know, like the Ramban, that you always get the tension that he's revealing too much and he's getting into trouble. And the Ramban did. The Ramban did get into trouble for revealing too much. There was never a book like the Ramban's before. I mean, the Ramban essentially was the first one who writes a mainstream book to reveal Kabbalistic secrets. The Vilna Gaon is not doing that. The Vilna Gaon is really almost, as I said, writing for himself. You know, how many students did the Vilna Gaon? How many people do you think saw him in his lifetime? These are things which will boggle the mind, because it's possible he didn't have more than 10 students. It's possible that not more than 100 people ever saw him in his life. He didn't have a yeshiva. He didn't have a job. He wasn't a rav in a place. He actually had a great-grandfather who left him a deal of money and left to any of his descendants. His name was Moshe Rifkus, who left money for any of his descendants who learned Torah full-time. And that's how the Vilna Gaon was supported. He sat and he learned. He had a trust fund, if you will. Never held an official job. Never had a yeshiva. Never had any of the things that you would think about it. Just wasn't true. What happened is that a couple of people would come and talk to him. Rav Chaim Volozhin is considered his main student. May not have met him more than 10 times in his life. I know what I'm saying right now may sound incredibly difficult, but that's nonetheless.
Did he have descendants?
Yeah.
Famous?
Yes. There's actually a book. I can also send you a link. You can find thousands and thousands of descendants of the Vilna Gaon. Anyway, let's. We could talk more about this, but not now. Because he was recognized as the greatest rabbi in the world, as a young man. He was a legend in his own lifetime, which means people that met him just basically said that no one remembered there being a person like this. When I said he was like a Mozart, he knew everything at a very young age. By the age of 13, he knew all rabbinic literature. I'm saying, including Kabbalistic. He knew all of it by heart. So. And Rav Chaim Volozhin, who knew things pretty good, said, and I don't, meaning, he would say like this, if I were to ask you, poseach es yadecha, or poteach et yadecha in Ashrei, right? I would say all of you would know that line. What's the word before poteach? So you have to think for a second to go there. Sometimes if I give you a word in the middle, I have to go up to the first of the line. He said the gra, his knowledge of it, he knew it backwards, he knew it forwards, he knew the numerical value of every single verse. He was a mathematical genius as well. And he was able to, the more that you see his writings, the more that you realize that he saw things on many, many, many levels. And as I said, people that met him just apparently were astounded. One of the things, during his lifetime, was this major fight between Rav Yaakov Emden and Rav Yonasan Eifshitz, where each one accused the other of terrible things. And basically, all of Europe got caught into this fight. You were either on one side or the other. Half the rabbis in Europe were in Cherem at the time. Which half? Both. I mean, it depends. Both halves. But from one side from either camp. And they asked the Vilna Gaon to adjudicate the case. He was 27 years old. Meaning, what do you mean to ask? Again, he was a relatively young man. And both sides came, I remember it was both sides, but they sent him the information, says, please, can you, and he very, very wisely, Schneer Lyman has a whole analysis of the letter that he responded to, but you'll see he's a very smart man as well, by the way, that he got out of having to choose sides in this. Okay. Do you want stories or you want to learn? What? Where's Mozart? Mozart died.
Where are people like that today?
Let's continue. V'chein kol hama'aseh l'mi shemedaktik. And everything is there, is parallel for the person who is careful in the analysis. V'lechein namru b'sipu tzit mitzrayim v'doresh ma'arami oved avi. Okay, which was your point. And therefore, he says, when in the Haggadah, when we start telling the story of leaving Egypt, where do we start our story from? What is this is a Mishnah, by the way. This line, V'dorish me'arami oved avi, is the Mishnah telling us how we're supposed to tell over the story of leaving Egypt. What is the mitzvah, Sipur Tzvi Mitzrayim? Where does the story begin? The Mishnah says, where does it begin? With arami oved avi. Just to look for a second at source number... Look at source number 9 for a second. The Aramid Avid Avi has nothing to do with Pesach. The Aramid Avid Avi is what's said by the Bikurim when you bring the first fruits on the holiday of Shavuot. That's source number 9. Vanitav Amartil of Nehashem Lakecha, Aramid Avid Avi, Vered Mitzrayma. It's the only thing you have there. Oh, he went down to Egypt. By the way, what does Aramid Avid Avi mean, Vered Mitzrayma? Rashi says, Aramid Ovid Avi, Maskir Chazdeya Makom, Arami Oved Avi, Lavan Bikesh Lakoret Akol, Kisharodav Achar Yaakov. That Lavan wanted to destroy everything when he went chasing after Yaakov. Even that he thought of doing, it's considered as if he did it. And so on and so forth. The Gros pointing out that when we tell our story of leaving Egypt, we begin the story with Lavan chasing after Yaakov. That's the beginning of the story. Which, what's the matter?
It's the beginning of the end because it's associated with Bikurim, it's being chased out, but it's also has the association of having gotten to Israel as like passing.
Correct. Correct.
Redemption.
Correct. It's at the moment of redemption, looking back at the story from the beginning. Right. Back to the Gur on source number 3. We'll skip again the Kabbalistic parts, which obviously you don't need. And he writes again where it's bolded, fourth line from the bottom. Kimobi tiyat Mitzrayim, de eser makot hayu eser nisim li Yisrael, v'chein b'Yaakov, v'lovin l'kam imenu, v'nitkein b'Yaakov, kimobi Mitzrayim, v'achrin yetzu b'ruchush gadol. By Yaakov also it talks about, the number 10 is in that story, do you remember where? You've changed my wages 10 times. So he sees the number 10 as well over there. He says, okay, notice that as well. V'chein b'Yaakov k'tiv, u'me'a shela v'avinu, and so on and so forth. Okay. All that I'll tell you is what we get out of this source is that there is a connection. We don't know exactly the full aspect of the connection. We see a couple aspects of it. We see the main aspects of it. So let's quickly look at source number 4 and 5. V'yihi kasher yolda Rachel et Yosef, and when Rachel gave birth to Yosef, v'yom Yaakov v'Lavan shlacheni v'alchel makomi ul'artzi. Yaakov says, "Send me. I'm going to go back to my place and to my land." T'non nashay v'yodai shavadat yotchach v'hen v'elacha. You know, give me my wives, my children. Which Asher Avadati is also very interesting, because what does the word Avadati mean? Avadati can mean two different things. It could mean that I worked for, in the more generic phrase, or Avadati can also mean servitude or slavery. Which one do you think the Gro would say? Ki ata yadata et avodati asher avadaticha. And now you see this word avdut, right? Enslavement coming in 3 times within that verse. Why do I have a suspicion that the Gra would have said, that's one of the things that I was making reference to. Vayomer, I love Lavan, but I've been blessed because of you, which, by the way, is also true in Egypt. In Egypt, the Egyptian economy was completely blessed from the moment that the first Jew got there. And who was the first Jew that got there? Yosef. Now, just notice something, because this is actually very, very important. Is very, very important enough for you to understand it's very important, or I need more than 2 various? Should I say 3? Would that be enough of an emphasis?
Extremely important with all the problems.
The story over here also begins with Yosef. V'yihi kasher yolda Rachel et Yosef, v'yom Yaakov alav shecheni. That with the birth of Yosef, then he says, it's time to go. Which means both stories begin with Yosef. Okay? I cannot emphasize enough how important this is. Did I succeed or not yet?
Yes.
Matter of fact, there is a book which is written by the students of the Vilna Gaon. He himself had 2 aborted trips to the land of Israel, and he never made it. Aborted trips. He wanted to come, didn't work out. He did send his students, which means the beginning of Ashkenazim coming as a community to Israel were the Talmidei Hagra. Long before, when you read in your history books, the first Aliyah, the second Aliyah, the third Aliyah, you can read all the Aliyot that you want. Even before, okay, you have certain students of the Baal Shem Tov, very, very small, mainly near Tveria, the Vilna Gaon students come and settle Yerushalayim. But I'm saying there's a whole, what? The students of students and relatives. The Rivlin family, they used to say in Yerushalayim, any place you throw a rock, you'd hit a Rivlin, right? The Rivlin family are descendants of the cousin of the Vilna Gaon who came. Now, one of the Rivlins actually wrote a book which he said when the Vilna Gaon summoned him in and told him, you need to go to Israel and start the community, and that will be the beginning of the end of days. And he says, but it's dangerous in the Middle East. He says, it's worse in Europe. Those of you who go there will be saved. Those who stay behind over here won't be saved. Okay? 1790. Yeah, okay, that's... Chaim Volozhin never came. He opened the yeshiva Eitz Chaim. He opened the yeshiva Volozhin. So he sent his students over, but he told them, he gave them a mystical doctrine in terms of what's going to happen in the end of days and what are the elements of the redemption. And this I have this book at home, and the single most important aspect of this book, I mean, if you were to ask me, so how is the Vilna Gaon's vision of the end of days different from other people's visions? It's the emphasis that he puts on one particular character. Most people would put the emphasis, if you talk about, again, if you look at Chabad writings, so what's going to be the important thing? The important thing would be Mashiach. What about Mashiach? Mashiach ben David. Who's Mashiach ben David? They'll tell you who they think Mashiach ben David is. For the Vilna Gaon, that's not the important part. The important part is actually somebody named Mashiach ben Yosef. Mashiach ben Yosef, as far as the Gra is concerned, he's the one who does all the work, or 999 out of 1,000, he's the one who does that much work. And then at the very end, Mashiach ben David comes. It's a sense, it's an awakening from below, he describes it, and then awakening from above. And Yosef, he sees as a prototype of somebody who's a doer. Yosef is a doer. Yosef is the one, again, hands-on in Egypt, changes the economy, which brings us back to what we're up to over here. So therefore, when I say that both stories start with Yosef, and you don't know how important that is yet, for the Vilna Gaon, he did not miss this. Not only do I know he didn't miss this, I know that for the Vilna Gaon, this is the important aspect. And what I'm saying right now, I will prove to you before I finish, because I will bring another teaching of the Vilna Gaon, which, again, at face value, has nothing to do with what we've read so far, except it has everything to do with what we've read so far.
Is he the source of the idea that the Mashiach ben Yosef is a generation?
And not he... No. No. That Mashiach ben Yosef is a generation. What the Vilna Gaon does say is to his students that anybody who's involved in building Jerusalem has a spark of the neshama of Mashiach ben Yosef. So that's as close as you can get. Those of you who live in Yerushalayim, he would say that there's an aspect of Mashiach ben Yosef within what you're accomplishing, because the building of Yerushalayim is part of what Yosef does. And that's for a reason, because the Medrash Tanchuma tells us that the word Tzion, which is Jerusalem, it is beautiful, but is despised, has been jealous, it's been an object of jealousy, and then the Vilna Gaon would point out what's very obvious to anyone who's ever read that Midrash, that Sion is the same gematria as Yosef, the both 156, which is also the gematria of jealousy, which is Kin'ah, and therefore he said and the Midrash says there's a direct parallel between Yosef and Jerusalem. So therefore, the building of Jerusalem is something which is accomplished by Yosef, which then again goes back to this point of Mashiach ben Yosef, which is why the Vilna Gaon sends his students to Yerushalayim to build Jerusalem. And the person who broke through the walls of the old city and started building new neighborhoods was from the Rivlin family, directly trying to accomplish, again, messianic desire, trying to accomplish what the Vilna Gaon had told him to do, spread the walls of Jerusalem, build up Jerusalem. And that is the part of the role of Mashiach ben Yosef. Okay, let's continue. Source number 5, again, Ki b'chol kochi avadati et avichen. And here you have the verse in Pasuk Zayin, v'avichen hachtel b'yechlifet maskurti eseret monim. Over here you have the number 10 entering into the story as well, and so on. You also have in source number 6 now a little bit more. You have v'tignov Rachel et hatrafim asher laviha, which may also be parallel to certain elements in leaving Egypt, in terms of the taking of the things and so on. You have in verse 22, V'yugad lavan b'yom hashlishi, and on the third day, he is told, which is, now you look at that language compared to source number one, what do you notice? Yeah, v'yugad mechon ki v'racha am, and what does it say here? So now you notice, wow, that's the same verse, and right, and at this point already, the insight of the Vilna Gaon again becomes very, very clear that it wasn't just his imagination over here or his creativity. Is that no, this is the, again, he would say this is the same story, but just pay attention. Okay. Yeah, eventually the gold that was taken ends up becoming the Egel Azav. So therefore, as I said, there is certainly a parallel there, which I choose not to go into right now. The difference, of course, which again is a parallel, is God's manipulation of Paro / Lavan. But you'll tell me, but the manipulation is not the same. Okay, but now realize manipulation is there, which means you have the hardening of the heart, which means God is manipulating Paro. And here you have in verse 24, V'yavo Elohim alavan harami b'chalom halayla v'yom alahim mishachav ben derer Yaakov mitov adra. Which means over here you have a manipulation coming from above in terms of perhaps we can say Lavan's free will being suspended at this point in terms of God telling him, listen, I'm involved in this, and you can't do what you want to do. Again, I'll point out one more thing that we wanted, because you would not have noticed it otherwise. Lavan says in verse 27, Pasuk Kaf Zayin, he says, "Lama nechbeta livroach v'tignovoti v'lo gadati v'ashalachcha." I would have sent you. What does he say? "B'simcha uv'shirim b'tof uv'akinor." I would have sent you off. Now, when you read that by itself, one second. When you read that verse by itself, you only see it within the story of Yaakov and Lavan and their relationship, and you would tend to say, you know, I don't even know if it's true, but on a deep level, what does Lavan know? He knows that it would be appropriate for the way for them to leave would be with song and would be, what's a tough? Tough would be drums, and he said, it would be appropriate for me to get a marching band for you and to send you off, and that's the way that you're supposed to leave. Now, of course, what do you all realize that you never realized before? No, not just that. Again, read one story on the other now, and what happens, and now you say, hold it. Whose idea was Uz Yashir? No. Lavan. Lavan, which means where does Uz Yashir come from? When afterwards when it says here in source number 8, Uz Yashir Moshe Bnei Israel Tashira Hazot, and afterwards in source 20, in verse 20 there Pasuk Kaf Etikach Miorin Aviyachot Aron Etatof Biyadav Etzena V'Tupom V'Chalot, which means where did all of this come from? So that's again what I'm saying is that when the Vilna Gaon again said to us that, and there are many more elements. And he'll say more, that all the elements are the same. He's just saying, well, if you didn't notice it, well, you're not looking right. Again, he did not point this out. We're pointing this out. But is it quite obvious that he had this in mind as well? Again, the pasuk is the same, but the Yivrach, it's the same, right? But Yaged Levan, Yaged Leparo, it's the same. That's what he's saying. Just take a look. The song is the same, so even now you realize that you get much more insight of the Jews breaking out in song and breaking out in dance and taking out the instruments and playing when you realize that that came out of Levan's mouth after God warned him about, you know, the way you're supposed to be, you know, the way you're supposed to be behaving. So again, there is more of a parallel over here. At the end of source number 7, it says that there is an offering that takes place on the mountain then. V'yizbach Yaakov Zevach Bahar. So that also has a very interesting parallel to again, what was the stated purpose of the Jews leaving Egypt? To serve God on the mountain. Does it eventually happen that they serve God on the mountain? Yes. Which mountain is it? Har Sinai. What eventually they do? They bring a zevach. They bring an offering on the mountain. So I'm just pointing out that this element is there as well. And again, I don't want to beat a dead horse. There's many dead horses in this parsha. I don't want to beat a dead horse, but it's very clear that the Vilna Gaon noticed that as well, again, even though he does not make reference to it. Okay. So now we can get to the second part of the story. Second part of the story, and again, I apologize for your poor fonts in Source 11, but this is not my fault. But you know it by heart anyway. Here's a story. It's called Chad Gadya. And Chad Gadya, if you go looking it up, you'll find all kinds of things said. It's a children's nursery rhyme. It's all kinds of things. Chad Gadya. So I assume that you know the story, right? You'll find it at the end of your Haggadah. It's just there for reference to you to refer to. Source number 12 is the Vilna Gaon's first introduction to the story, to the Chad Gadya. Let's read his introduction. Chad Gadya de Zavin Abba. Pirish. Explanation. Klal Gadol Etzleinu. We have a major principle. Shekol HaTovot Shehayu. All good that was, Vishiyu, and will be, Vishiyu Od, Bein Ba'olam Hazeh Bein Olam Haba, Et Kulam Yerashnu Me'avotenu. Be'eit Shebirach Yitzchak Et Yaakov. All good in this world and the next flowed out of the blessing that Yitzchak gives to Yaakov. And that was also a very strong statement. Ululei HaBrachot, had it not been for these brachot, chasarnu et kol, we would have been devoid of everything. Ve'kol hayu la'esav, and everything would have gone to Esav. Vasiba la'brachot hayu shnei gidiyei izim. And the reason that we got the brachot were because of two gidiyei izim, two goats. Of course, Chad Gadya begins with one goat. But already what he's going to be telling you is this one goat that we're talking about is connected to the two goats. Now, I want to pause over here for a moment. What is the moral right that we have to, and there's two things here, he'll mention them as we go along, there's two issues, which are the two main issues of Yaakov's life. One is the bracha, meaning blessing, and the other is the bechorah, meaning the firstborn. What exactly is the moral right that Yaakov has to either the bracha or the bechora, the moral right? And that goes back to a sale that took place. What was the sale that took place? Esav sold the bechora to Yaakov, which means the bechora comes to Yaakov, what you would say fair and square, legally, morally, ethically, and so on and so forth. That may very well be the starting point, Chad Gadya Dezavin Abba Bitrezuze. That may very well be the very beginning of the story over here that he's referring to. I know that you're saying, but where's the Gadi? That may very well be the beginning of the story. Let's now continue in what he writes over here. Uvi Gemara Amru, and the Gemara says, V'chi ma'achalo shel Yitzchak hayu shnei gidei izim? And the Gemara asks, was the meal that Yaakov received two goats? Ela echad lepesach ve'echad lechagiga. But rather, it's parallel to the two korbanot which are brought on Pesach night. On Pesach night, actually the korban Pesach comes at the end of the meal. The main part of the meal is the korban chagiga, the celebratory, not the paschal lamb, but the celebratory lamb. So it says that really he ate that night two izim. What were the two izim that Yaakov prepared? One was the korban Pesach, or one was the korban chagiga. One was the thing which facilitated the liberation, which is the Korban Pesach, and the other is the celebration of the leaving Egypt. Those are two separate aspects, yes? The facilitating aspect and the celebratory one. That's the Korban Pesach and the Korban Chagiga. V'rabotenu dorshu kach lecha shnei gidei izim, and the rabbis say, his mother says, Rivka says, take two izim, tovim, what does it mean, tovim, plural, tov lecha v'tov levanecha. This will be good for you and good for future generations, which means over here the Vilna Gaon is telling us, where does the Korban Pesach begin? Moreover, where does leaving Egypt begin? Leaving Egypt begins when Yaakov brings the food for his father. That's when the Korban Pesach is being celebrated. Now I have to point out the other side of the same coin. And what's that? At which point is it decided that Yaakov's descendants will be the ones who were enslaved? That means at which point is it determined that Yaakov's descendants have inherited the prophecy given to Avraham that your children will be enslaved for 400 years? that happens also when he takes the Bechora, which means when he takes the Bechora, he has now inherited slavery. When he goes into Yitzchak and he brings the two Gedeim, what has he now inherited? Now he's inherited the leaving of Egypt. Okay? Continue. When Yaakov takes the Bechora from Esau. It's indeed soup. Okay, continue. Tov lecha, it's good for you, shetirash et habrachot, that you were going to inherit the blessings. V'tov levanecha, sheyizku lehevi shnei si'irim lechaper aleichem biyom kippurim. And now he gives another aspect of the same thing. And the other aspect is Yom Kippur. And how did Yom Kippur get into this? I'm still a little conflicted how much I'm going to go into this at all. But I'll just point out something very, very simple. There's 2 days a year that we say Lashon HaBa B'Yerushalayim. One is at the end of the Seder, and the other is at the end of Yom Kippur. I will tell you that there's a parallel between the two. I will tell you that there's more going on. Right over here, within, again, this commentary, the Chad Gadya, he's telling you, yes, there's one Gedi, and this one Gedi is actually two Gedim, and the two Gedim actually manifest itself in different places. It's the Seir LaHashem and the Seir LaZazel, and it's the Korban Chagiga, and it's the Korban Pesach. So how did you get one Gedi just now turned into four Gedim? Continue. Echad laHashem veEchad laAzazel, v'nira dahaba hatalia, that these things are interrelated. Kamosha siirim sheyom kippurim echad balachaper veEchad balafayes haSatan shleiktur kachas siirim, that the two of them are used in a similar way, parallel to the Korban Pesach and Korban Chagiga, which I'm not going to explain. Continue. Now it's underlined. V'yadua, and it's well known. Ki abrachot masar Yaakov avinu olav Shalom levno liYosef. That Yaakov gave the blessings over to Yosef. Now, Yosef was not mentioned by the Gra in the other teaching. I mentioned Yosef in the other teaching. And I told you that according to the Vilna Gaon, Yosef is very important. And now you'll see how important Yosef is. All the blessings that Yaakov received, all of it went to Yosef. Gam habichora natan lo. Also the firstborn went to him. Ukashibirach Yaakov levanav. Bakol shvatim lo neman lashon bracha. Go through all the blessings of all the sons. Now, I would actually say, in quotations, go through all the quote-unquote blessings to all the sons. The Vilna Gaon is pointing out the word blessing is not mentioned in any of them. The only son that the word blessing is utilized specifically is by Yosef. Uvi Yosef k'tiv, b'rchot avicha tiyena l'rosh Yosef. By him it says, the blessing of your father will be on Yosef's head, which means that Yosef receives all of this bracha. Which bracha? All the bracha which Yaakov got from Yitzchak. That bracha, according to the Vilna Gaon, all good that has ever happened for the Jewish people came from that place. The bracha went to his sons. Independently of that, it says, the brachot avicha tiyena l'rosh Yosef. It's going on Yosef. The brachot are going to Yosef. Now, the gamze yadua, and it's also well known, shehashvatim gavra kin'ah b'nehem. It's well known that among the brothers, there's a great deal of jealousy among them. U'machru et Yosef. And they sold Yosef. Otolim Mitzrayim. Kidei levatel habrachot ba'bechora, in order to cancel the brachot u'bechora. And at this point, you can possibly say that Yaakov gets the bracha in lieu of shnei gidei izin, right? Yaakov's bracha goes to Yosef, and Yosef is now sold, which becomes a very interesting chad gadya theme over here, but we'll get to more in a second. V'nitgalgel hadavar, and the way that the things developed, v'yardu avotenu l'mitzrayim, that our forefathers went down to Egypt. V'ktiv, v'et hamateh hazeh tikach biyadcha, and there it says, again, one of the major supporting actors, right, in the whole story of leaving Egypt is the mateh, is the staff. take the staff in your hand, asher taseba ota otot, v'chein yivru shehoyu machmata mateh. That it's because of the staff that all kinds of miracles happen. V'chein ananea kavod, v'chol hatavod shayu b'beit hamikdash nikra al hamateh. And all of the miracles that took place all the way, the clouds of glory all the way to the Beit HaMikdash. And of course, the clouds of glory are interrelated with the Beit HaMikdash, which I hope I don't have to explain. All of this comes from the Mateh. K'moshin ha'sebi mei Moshe ha'yaschut ha'mateh, just like in Moshe's time, it was because of the merit of the Mateh. U'moshe masar li Yoshua, and Moshe gave this over to Yeshua. V'zeh sh'ramaz bala ha'gadah hichnet galgal l'dvar b'vorm l'mitzrayim. And what the Haggadah of Pesach is telling you about is how it worked out that they got to Egypt, uve ezes chut negalu, and with which merit they got out, mashaya meirosh v'atzof, something which happened from the beginning to end, v'zesha katuv chad gadya, and that's the story of chad gadya. And then he continues and he gives us the following interpretation of the specific elements. V'atash shunra. Okay, the Gdi was sold. At this point, we have no idea what the Gdi is. Is the Gdi what Yaakov fed Yitzchak? The answer is yes. Is the Gdi somehow related to Yosef himself, who ended up being exchanged for the Bracha? Possibly yes. Shunra is the cat. The Ata Shunra. The Shunra, the cat came. Teva HaShunra, what is the nature of cats? He mit kanat. Cats are full of jealousy. Vizeo kinat HaShvatim shekanu b'Yosef. So the Gdi, the one little Gdi, is who? Yosef. The one little Gdi is Yosef. And Yosef is actually attacked by the cat, and the cats sell him off to Egypt. V'ata kalba, a dog comes and hits the cats. And who's the dog? Zuparo. Paro is the one who gets back, right? Who's the one who goes and enslaves the tribes. V'ata chutra, how do you say chutra in Hebrew? The chutra is the mateh. Right? The chutra in Aramaic is the Aramaic. By the way, any of you who've been learning the Targum for the last couple of parashot, every time it says, take the staff, take the mateh, the Aramaic translation every time is chutra. Now, you could be, you're saying, hold it, chutra, that's familiar. I heard chutra someplace. What was after four cups of wine at the end of the Seder? And all you're thinking about is, I got to clean up, and you didn't pay attention. The ata chutra. And the chutra comes. What's the chutra? Zehamateh. Shehikal paro. So now suddenly, this fairy tale story, which is meaningless, the Vilna Gaon has suddenly created a narrative over here, which may actually be interesting. Va'atanura. And the fire comes and destroys the mateh. Zeyetzahara. Which means, what is the mateh? The mateh eventually, according to the Vilna Gaon, what did he tell you that the mateh developed into? No, the mateh. What did the mateh develop into? Ananea kavod and the Beit HaMikdash. And what happens to the Beit HaMikdash? It gets destroyed by the Yetzer Hara. The Atanura, and the fire comes and destroys the Beit HaMikdash. Which again, this miraculous staff, which punishes our enemy, does not work when we are guilty of sin. Again, Ananei HaKavod, think a second. What happens when the Jews sin with the golden calf? Ananei HaKavod disappear. Right? What happens? The Yetzer Hara comes, Ananei HaKavod leaves. What eventually happens? God says, okay, build the Mishkan. The Mishkan morphs into a Beit HaMikdash. What happens to the Beit HaMikdash? Yetzer Hara comes, Beit HaMikdash disappears. Which means, what happens then? Again, according to the Vilna Gaon, the fire comes and destroys the stick. The Atatura. And what is a Tura? Tura is a bull. Now that's very interesting because a bull. Because a bull is Yosef. And over here he says Atatura is Edom. And this is what I will still need to explain today, that there are two types. When one speaks about, let's even say the Sefirot, because part of this is about the Kabbalistic Sefirot. When one deals with the Sefirot, there are Sefirot in Kedusha and there is Sefirot in Tum'ah. When one deals with almost anything in this world, something can be elevated and turned into something which is holy, or something can be lowered and turned into something which is full of, which is basically a counterfeit. It's called the Klipah, it's a counterfeit. In a sense, the counterfeit of Yosef is Edom, which is really, really two protagonists, Yosef and Edom, which I'm going to get to a little bit. Right. Yaakov, Yosef, right. The protagonist of Esav is Yosef. Yosef is the shore, but Yosef is the shore of Kedusha. Yosef is this bull, as it were, but in a holy sense. While on the other hand, Edom is this bull, but in a unholy sense. It's meaning Yosef is about power, right? Yosef is the shalit. Yosef is power all over Egypt. Who eventually becomes the greatest? Yosef is the most powerful person in the world for a while. Who then becomes the most powerful? Edom becomes the most powerful. So now the question is, what happens with this power? Which means you can use the power to take care of others, to feed others, and to, you know, basically for benevolent purposes, or you can use the power to try to destroy others and control others and so on. Which means it's seeing over here that the bull over here is Edom. Vishata lemaya, and the bull drinks the water. What is the water? Zekneset Yisrael. Which means the bull comes to destroy Israel, destroys the Beit HaMikdash and 2,000 years of persecution. But now, the girl is going into the future. Va'ata ha-shochet. And the shochet comes. And who's the shochet? Ze Mashiach ben Yosef. Which means, okay, here's where the Vilna Gaon showed his hand. Mashiach ben Yosef, and I just got into the story, Mashiach ben Yosef comes, and he's the one who is going to destroy, he's the one who's going to shecht Edom. He's the one who's going to shecht this force of evil. And I want you to notice something which is real interesting. When Yosef gets to Egypt, whose house does he end up in? Potiphar, what's his title? Sar HaTabachim, which means the Shochet. He is the chief. He is either the chief executioner or the chief. Either he's the Shochet, which means over here you have again the powers of holiness and the powers of Tum'ah, you know, conflicting with one another. Yosef being the Shochet in Kedusha. Yosef is the one who will slaughter, but within Kedusha, where again he is the direct parallel to the Sar HaTabachim, which again now will go back to the whole beginning of the story of Egypt, is all right over here. And then something terrible happens, Va'ata Malach HaMavet, and then the angel of death comes, Ki Mashiach ben Yosef Neherag. Because the Gemara tells us that the Mashiach ben Yosef is killed. And that's how he ends the story over here. But again, you know how the Chad Gadya ends up with, and then God comes and kills the Malach HaMavet. God then kills. By the way, it is possible even to even describe the Malach HaMavet of as Potiphar, the Sarat HaBachim. It is possible to see him as a Malach HaMavet, which means in every generation there are people who have blood on their hands. I mean, what's Mengele? He's not a Malach HaMavet. What's Hitler is a Malach HaMavet during the execution, or what was in Torquemada, right? Is the Malach HaMavet. If his job was Sar HaTabachim, the way understood by many commentaries, not the chief butcher, but the butcher in the sense, the chief executioner, he's also the Malach HaMavet. Which means you have, in the story of Yosef, a conflict right there. And Yosef, I want you to understand this. In the story of Yosef, he should have been killed. He could have, should have, would have been killed on multiple occasions, by the way. Which means Yosef goes through a great part of his life where people think that he's dead. The Vilna Gaon, and here's a little secret just so that you wouldn't feel I didn't give you anything today. The Vilna Gaon in the writings that I have at home, which is not mentioned here, and this goes back to a writing which is the same as the Arizal and others, says, even though the Gemara says Mashiach ben Yosef died, he doesn't really die. Now, I have to explain this to you. The Gemara doesn't say he died. The Gemara says it's a Gemara in Sukkah on page 52. It says there's going to be a time of great calamity, great mourning, great crying. Why are people crying? So one opinion in the Gemara there's two opinions. One opinion is because for Mashiach ben Yosef who will be killed. These Kabbalists understood that people will mourn him because they think he's dead. Just as Yaakov mourned for Yosef because he thought he's dead. But what ends up happening in the story of Yosef? Od Yosef Chai. No, Yosef is still alive. Yosef is not really dead. And according to the Vilna Gaon, Mashiach ben Yosef can be kept alive, which means he doesn't have to work out that way, which means mourning will take place, the perception will take place. Yosef is hidden, Sofnat Paneach, Yosef is hidden, but Yosef is not necessarily dead. And even over here, that the Malach HaMavet comes, and as I said, I have a very easy way of understanding the Malach HaMavet, even in terms of Potiphar. And again, you would think, again, just think for a second of logic in that story, that if the wife of Potiphar comes, and says that Yosef did this and this. So, of course, Yosef's dead. I mean, what's there to talk about? Of course he's going to kill him. But no, Yosef isn't dead. Od Yosef chai. Yosef continues to live. His brothers say, let's kill him. Yaakov thinks he's dead. No, od Yosef chai. Which means you talk about the cat over here. Yosef is really the cat that has nine lives, as it were. But Yosef continues to live. Now, let's get to what I wanted to get to. In the beginning of our parasha this week, source 13. V'yasev l'kim et ha'am derech ha'midbar yamsuf v'chamushim alu b'nei Yisrael me'er mitzrayim. They go out of Egypt and they're armed. That's what chamushim means. Even Rashi says it means that. Then he gives a second interpretation. V'yikach Moshe et atzmot Yosef. Oh, look at that. Lo and behold, Yosef was within our story as well this week. We just maybe didn't really remember or notice or think it was that important. My question to you now at this point, do you think Yosef is an important part of the story of leaving Egypt? So now you realize, yeah, this is really quite important. A matter of fact, when you look at source 14, going back to Eshet Potiphar, Vatitpaseu bivigdo leimor shichva imi vayazov bigdo idav vayanas vayetze achutza. What does vayanas mean? He escaped. Vayehi kirota ki azav bigdo biyadav vayanas achutza. Right, and she held on to his clothing and he ran away, which again could have caused his death sentence. In Tehillim, in the Hallel, which we read, in source 15 it says, Hayam ra'a vayanas, that the sea saw something and ran away. What did it see? Ancient rabbinic source in the Mechilta, source 16, Shimon ish kitron omer bischut atzmot Yosef ani karea lematayam. Because of Yosef, I am going to split the sea. V'yazov bigdo etzlav yanas achutza v'ktiv hayam rav yanas. Which means basically, again, you want this on a simple level. Of course, you now realize this is a deeper Kabbalistic level. You want this on a simple level. Yosef went against nature. A 17-year-old man or boy, hormones, this and that, and he's able to control his nature to go against his nature and to walk out of the room. The sea then goes against its nature and splits. That's what this midrash is saying. Again, on the simplest level, but now you realize something. Am Yisrael leave Egypt, and Chamushim, they're armed. Moshe leaves, he's also armed. What is Moshe armed with? Moshe is armed with, and I've said this once before, what is Moshe armed with? He's armed with Yosef's remains. Ultimately, you now realize that all the primitive weapons that the Jews may have, the slingshots and the sticks and the bows and arrows and all that, that's not what saves them. What ends up saving them? Yosef saves them. Which means, again, according to the Mechilta, is Yosef an unimportant element of, almost like an asterisk to the story? Oh yeah, there was a promise at one point to take Yosef out. No, it's saying that's why the sea splits, is because of Yosef. Now, in the song afterwards, we say, in source 18, chapter 15, verse 7, V'rov ga'oncha taharos kamecha teshlach haroncha ya'achlemu kakash. What does that mean, ya'achlemu kakash? That they will be swallowed up like straw. That's what it says, that the enemies will be swallowed up like straw. Of course, straw is mentioned one or two times in the story. Source number 19, where the first time he comes and says, letting people go, and says, no, now you can go and get your own straw, right? Lakash l'tevin, you'll get your own straw and gather it, which means you have a certain parallel there in terms of straw. There is, however, a verse that says, in source 20 in Ovadia, V'ya Beit Yaakov Esh, the house of Yaakov is like fire, Uvet Yosef Lahava, and the house of Yosef is the flame, Uvet Esav Lakash, and the house of Esav will become burnt like straw, swallowed up by the flames of Yosef. V'dalku bahem, they'll be lit, V'achalum, and they'll be swallowed up, V'lo yesarid levet Esav ki Hashem diber, and there'll be no remnant of the house of Esav, for God has spoken. This over here clearly tells us about how it is that Yosef is able to defeat Esav. And this is the swallowing up. You realize now this language is right there in the middle of the Shira as well, which means the prophecy of Avadia is right there in the Shira as well, which again, what instigates the splitting of the sea is Yosef. Now continue, Rashi, going back to what we saw all the way before, when Yosef was born, Yaakov said, time to leave. Look what Rashi writes. Kasher yolda Rachel et Yosef, mishenolad sitno shel Esav. the opposite side of Esav, the adversary of Esav. Shenemar v'ya beit Yaakov esh u'beit Yosef lahava u'beit Esav l'kash. Aval b'lo lahava eino shalet l'merchak. Mishenolad Yosef batach Yaakov b'kadosh baruch hu v'retzah l'shuv. That Yosef's birth, that now this, the shochet, who's going to be able to shecht the shore, the Torah, right? If you go back to the Chad Gadya, now we can go. Because now the adversary is born. The Rashi over here is quoting from Gemara in Source 22. Boy mine Rav Chelbo mi Rav Shmuel bar Nachmani k'tiv v'yikashe yodar Rachel et Yosef ma'ishna k'yad lid Yosef. What does it do with Yosef is born? Amar lei ra'a Yaakov avinu she'in zero shel Esav nimsar ela b'yad zero shel Yosef. Shenemar v'ya beit Yaakov esh u'beit Yosef lava u'beit Esav l'kash. That this comes to Yaakov's realization that once Yosef is here, once Yosef is on the scene, so now already the story can begin. Which means the leaving of Egypt, I just want to go back and look at the larger picture right now. The leaving of Egypt is parallel to the leaving of Yaakov from Laban's house. It may very well be that the most important aspect there is not mentioned by the Vilna Gaon in his commentary of the Zohar. Again, he lines it all up, it's all there. The one thing he leaves out over there is any mention of Yosef. But that's the starting point. And as far as the Vilna Gaon is concerned, it's the starting point and it's the end point. How do I know it's the starting point and the end point? Because we took a look at his commentary to the Chad Gadya. And as far as the story of the Chad Gadya goes, then he goes back and shows you very clearly that this is really about Yosef. It's true that he leaves you in that particular episode. Okay, Yosef dies and doesn't tell you what he does say in other places. No, it looks like Yosef dies. That doesn't necessarily mean that Yosef is dead or Mashiach ben Yosef is dead, because as we know that there are numerous times that it may look like Yosef is dead, or Mashiach ben Yosef is dead, when that is not necessarily the reality. What the Vilna Gaon is really doing over here, and again, I hope that by this point it becomes clear, is that yes, he's linking the past and the present and the future within the story of Egypt, which by the way is ultimately what we do when we study or we experience the Seder. Ultimately, what we're doing is we're not just looking at the past, we're also trying to use the message of the Haggadah for the future as well. But he understands that the very elements of the leaving of Egypt have its antecedents long before that. It's also interesting when you parallel them and you realize that there's an end-of-day message over here. The end-of-day message does include Yosef, who I will readily admit, you look at Yosef's participation in the leaving of Yaakov from Laban. It's non-participation. He's a little baby. No, but he's the impetus. It's the very beginning of the story. You look at the leaving of Egypt. You say, what does Yosef do with the leaving of Egypt? Okay, maybe he's mentioned here in one place, but it's much more. Now I'll keep one more thing in mind for you. The end of Parshat Bishalach has one more element to it, and what is that? A war breaks out, and who is the war between? The Jews and Amalek. Who does Moshe send to go below and to fight against Amalek? He sends Yehoshua. And Yehoshua, from which tribe is he associated, or which tribe is he from? He's from Yosef. He's from Ephraim. He's from Yosef, which means here you see, again, the antecedents of this battle between Am Yisrael versus Esav, but now it's become Yehoshua versus Amalek. But why specifically Yeshua? And that's everything that we've seen till now. Now that battle itself, again, end of Bishalach, ends up with this war against Amalek. That's also really talking about, shall we say, foreshadowing of Gog u'Magog, foreshadowing of the ultimate war, foreshadowing of Mashiach ben Yosef taking on whatever other forces are there. But ultimately what happens is Mashiach ben Yosef has the ability of destroying or shechting, as it were, this Edom, shechting the Torah, and at the end of the day, a Kodesh Baruch Hu comes, and this is together with Mashiach ben David as well. And that happens again, that's why I didn't get into it. There is this last element which is not mentioned in the Chad Gadya, but at the very end, when it says God comes and completely gets rid of the Malach HaMavid, this is really the role, the very end of what Mashiach ben David, according to the Vilna Gaon, who does this the last, just the icing on the cake, the last thing, but the major. Battle is really fought by Yosef, and the major accomplishments by Yosef. And for us, we can just see a little bit what we saw in that Mechilta, that the splitting of the sea is not for any other reason. The splitting of the sea is vayar ha'yam vayanos. It sees something and then runs away. What does it see? It sees the atzmot Yosef. It sees the remains of Yosef. You'll see the remains. So Yosef split the sea because you would think that Yosef's dead. It's Yosef's remains. But what's the answer? No. Od Yosef chai. Shh. Have a good vacation.